Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to our session this morning and our first speech is a special keynote address by Dr. Prabhu Pingali, who is the Deputy Director of the Agricultural Development Program at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation in Washington. Not Washington, D.C., Washington State. And Dr. Pingali, due to some other commitments that he has at the Gates Foundation, cannot be here with us this morning, but he is beaming his presentation to us. And before we have his presentation, let me say very briefly that Dr. Pingali, prior to joining the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, worked with the FAO in Rome from 2002 to 2007. He was elected to the U.S. National Academy of Sciences. He's been president of the International Association of Agricultural Economics from 2003 to 2006. He's a fellow of the same association. He was appointed to the U.S. National Academy's Roundtable on Sustainability for 2006 to 2010. Dr. Pingali has over three decades of experience analyzing food, agriculture and development policy in Asia, Africa, and Latin America. He's had extensive experience in the CGIAR, working previously with CIMIT and IRI as an agricultural economist, and prior to that, he was with the World Bank's Agricultural and Rural Development Department as an economist. Prabhu Pingali has authored 10 books and over 100 refereed journal publications on food policy, technological change, productivity growth, and resource management in the developing world. He has many honors and recognitions in honor of his work. So we'll have Dr. Pingali's presentation. Thank you.
Good morning. It's a great delight for me to talk to the Global Food Security Conference at McGill University. I'm sorry I could not be there in person, and I hope this video alternative works. Today, I'd like to talk to you about a topic that's very much in the news. It's about global food prices, the trends in global food prices, increasing volatility in prices, what that means for food security, and how do we get beyond the current rise in food prices? How do we bring food prices back down in a sustainable manner by focusing on smallholder productivity growth and sustainable smallholder productivity growth? That's what I'd like to talk about today. First, let's reflect on what happened to food prices. Most of us know that we've been through a sustained period of low and declining food prices. Between 1985, 2005, 2006 time period. And it's been a period during which we've seen the global food economy with surpluses in food. We've had a period of complacency about our ability to feed ourselves. And we've seen a period when agriculture fell off the global agenda and agriculture fell off the national agendas. But we've also been rudely awakened from that period of complacency when in 2007, 2008, food prices suddenly reversed themselves and started rising again. And we've seen them rise to a peak in 2008. Many of us at that time felt that this was a one-off event, which was caused due to bad weather, due to low stocks, due to speculation, etc. But food prices, after falling a little bit after their 2008 peak, remained stubbornly high and did not come all the way back down to the low levels that were there in the pre-2008 time period. And by 2011, we saw another peak in prices, and in 2012, we've seen another peak in food prices taking place. So we are in a period now of higher food prices, and we are in a period of increased volatility in food prices. And that's been a major concern for the food policy community around the world. And that's actually brought agriculture back on the agenda at the global level and at the national level. So at least that's part of the good news that's come out of this change in trends in food prices. What I'd like to do is dig a little bit deeper into the food prices and see where the growth in food prices is taking place. So much of the discussion we have about food prices is related to the FAO Food Price Index. And the Food Price Index is actually composed of several different indices around different food groups. So it's composed of what happens to prices of the staple cereal crops such as rice, wheat, etc., livestock products, meat, dairy products, oils, fats, and then sugars and other commodities. So what happens long term to food prices depends a lot on what happens to each of these commodity prices and the trends in these commodity prices. If you look at the staple cereals, you find that over the last few years, we've seen a sharp rise in staple cereal prices, but also increased volatility in these prices. And that's particularly true in the case of rice. The market for rice is very, very thin. The global movement of rice, the global trade in rice, is actually only about 30 million tons. So even a tiny shortfall in any country that's a major importer of rice can have a major impact on global prices of rice. And we've seen this happen time and again. We've seen this happen particularly in 2008 and after 2008, when bad weather in one country or low stocks in one country have resulted in a sharp increase in rice imports and rising rice prices. And when rice prices rise, that then drives the price of wheat and price of the other staples, because countries tend to substitute from one staple to another depending on the price situation. Overall, you find that the staple commodity markets are extremely tight, and they're extremely tight because overall demand for cereals has been rising quite steadily over the years, and it's been rising because of population growth rates and income growth rates and consumption of larger and larger quantities of cereals, especially in the developing world. At the same time, overall supplies have tended not to grow as rapidly, and the overall growth has been sluggish. And because of that, over time, you're beginning to see commodity staple markets becoming extremely tight and becoming extremely volatile as shortfalls in production affect overall prices and overall supplies. So that trend in the commodity staple food market will continue to be there as long as productivity growth remains sluggish. And we need to focus on enhancing productivity of the basic staple cereals. Then let's look at livestock products. One thing we are observing today is, as you see increased growth in middle class populations around the developing world, and as you see an increased income of these middle class populations, you see fairly dramatic changes in diet taking place. Diets which were very focused on cereal staples becoming more diversified to include meats, dairy. products, fruits, vegetables, etc. Meat in particular has seen significant increase in consumption all across the developing world, particularly looking at Asia and looking at Latin America. And as that consumption of meat has been increasing, that's been reflected in a steady increase in overall price of beef, of poultry products, and other livestock products. And that trend is expected to continue. Productivity levels overall for livestock products are significantly lower than the productivity trends for crop-based products. And without massive enhancements in livestock productivity, you'll continue to see an upward pressure on livestock products into the future. The other sets of commodities where you see a dramatic increase in overall prices in the last several years is in the case of oils and sugars. Oils have tripled and quadrupled in prices since 1990 time period. Groundnut oil, palm oil, soybean, etc., have seen a phenomenal growth in prices. Part of that's related to the diet change, increased consumption of oils in the food itself, but part of it is also related to diversion of some of the oils into biofuel production. And that's a similar story in the case of sugars. Sugars in the diets have been increasing, but also diversion of sugar into ethanol and biofuel production, biodiesel production, has been increasing. And as the demand for biofuels increases, you begin to see increased amount of diversion of food products into the biofuel market. Oils, sugars, and then corn are all commodities which you will see this trend taking place. That relationship between food and fuel prices is a relationship that's historically been quite strong, but it's become increasingly stronger in the last decade, and I anticipate it will become even stronger as you look ahead. And the only relief we're going to get in this relationship is as more and more of the biofuel production moves into third and fourth generation biofuels, biofuels that depend less and less on food commodities and look for other sources of feedstock into the biofuel production process. And that's a challenge that needs to be addressed by the R&D community and the overall biofuel production and supply community itself. Let me take a minute and address the issue of the recent U.S. drought. There's been a lot of discussion about the impact of the U.S. drought on food prices. But when you look at what's happened globally, the global impact of U.S. drought on global food security has been rather limited. And I don't anticipate that, given the current situation, that you will see a big impact on overall food security globally, except for a few of the major corn importing countries in Latin America, Mexico, Central America in particular. For Sub-Saharan Africa and for South Asia and for East Asia, the impacts are going to be quite small. And there are several reasons for this. One of the reasons for this is that there have been good harvests in other parts of the world this year, in Australia, in Latin America, and Canada, etc. And that has buffered overall food supplies and overall exportable food supplies. At the same time, for many of the large countries in the developing world that may depend on some levels of food imports, you've seen significantly higher levels of food stocks this year than we witnessed in 2008 time period, especially if you look at countries such as India, China, Indonesia, etc. These countries have good food stocks and so have not had the same pressure that they had in the past. Third, I think what's been different this year compared to previous years is that there's a lot better information available today on overall food supplies, overall food stocks, etc. And the reason for improved information on the food situation is that the OECD countries have invested significantly in the agriculture market information system that's been put in place, that's been tracking almost on a weekly basis the food supply situation and food stock situation in OECD countries, but also in some of the major food importing countries across the world. And that increased transparency is beginning to make a big difference in the food markets. What I'd like to do now is to look at how one can manage the long-term trends in food prices, and to manage them primarily through focusing on productivity improvement, and specifically focusing on smallholder productivity improvement in the developing world. So, when you think about a supply response to high food prices, a supply response coming from farmers in the developing world, then one thinks about it in terms of a two-pronged strategy. One thinks about it in terms of enhancing overall food supplies for farmers in countries which have chronically low agriculture productivity, the least developed countries around the world, particularly countries in sub-Saharan Africa. And second, to look at how do you enhance overall productivity levels in the so-called modernizing economies, the so-called emerging economies that have gone through a green revolution and now are in the post-green revolution period, and also have regions within those countries that have low productivity and need for overall enhancements in productivity. So I see a two-pronged approach, and I'd like to talk about the two-pronged approach here. So first, let's look at the low productivity agricultural economies. As I said, many of these countries are in sub-Saharan Africa, but certainly not just limited to sub-Saharan Africa. You see countries in South Asia, also a few countries in Central America, etc., which would fall into this broader category. These are countries which are called the least developed economies. These are countries which have a large share of agriculture in their GDP, but they are also countries which have very low productivity levels. Their overall capacity to improve productivity is very low, their R&D capacity is low, their overall infrastructure capacity is low, the extension capacity is low. And for many of these countries, the prospects for reaching the MDG goals is very, very low. They continue to face chronic problems of poverty, hunger, poor health, environmental degradation, etc. In order to be able to dramatically transform agriculture in these countries and to enhance overall productivity, one needs to look at several dimensions to the problem and address it in a multifaceted manner. First, there needs to be significant investments in R&D. R&D that's targeted to crops that are important to the poor, crops such as cassava, sorghum, millet, etc. And that's a major investment that needs to be made, and that needs to be sustained over the long term. And that's a priority that needs to be addressed. Second, many of these countries have very low levels of input use today. The average level of fertilizer use in sub-Saharan Africa is around 10 kilograms per hectare. Compare that to the average across the developing world, which is around 100 kilograms per hectare. That's an enormous difference. The average yields for staple crops in sub-Saharan Africa is around a ton per hectare. Compare that to 4 to 5 tons per hectare elsewhere in the developing world. That's an enormous difference. So there is a need to be able to bridge that yield gap. There is a need to bridge that yield gap through better access to inputs, better use of inputs across these least developed countries. Third, many of these countries have low productive agriculture systems because the opportunity for marketing increased produce is very, very limited. Overall market infrastructure is a major constraint in these economies. And investments in better roads, better transport systems, better market infrastructure is a crucial part of what's needed for enhancing productivity. Finally, the policy environment is quite discriminatory towards enhancing overall productivity. And unless farmers have the incentives for enhancing their productivity, they're not going to be able to do so. Incentives through better pricing is an essential part of the policy reform that needs to take place if we want to see sustained increases in productivity for the low productive agriculture systems. Then you've got, on the other side, the major transforming economies, the emerging economies. And these countries face two different types of problems. One, in many of these countries, the rising middle class, the diversification of the middle class, especially based in urban centers, is leading to a change in the way food is supplied to these populations. Much of the food supply to these populations is taking place through increasingly modernizing food retail systems, the supermarket chains, and the way the supermarkets are now spreading across urban centers in the developing world. The challenge for smallholder agriculture systems is to be able to integrate into that retail chain and into that retail chain system, and to be able to grow as that retail system grows and provides for the growing urban populations. And that's a major challenge that needs to be addressed, and right now is not significantly addressed by the R&D community and the policy community in many of the emerging economies. And that's where much of the growth and productivity of agriculture in these systems is going to come from. At the same time, in many emerging economies, you still have regions that are lagging behind. Regions which continue to have low productive agriculture systems, regions which end up with high concentrations of poverty. Eastern India is an example, Western China is an example, Northeast Thailand is an example, etc. And what one needs to do is essentially go back to basics for these lagging regions, basics in terms of focusing on enhancing smallholder productivity and focusing on staple crop productivity improvements for these lagging regions. And that's where the growth in productivity will come from, which will then allow these lagging regions to be able to integrate into the more progressive parts of the economy. Climate change is going to be a major problem, whether you look at the emerging economies or whether you look at the least developed economies. In both cases, the long-term impacts of climate change in terms of changing temperatures, etc., is a reality that needs to be faced overall in terms of long-term productivity growth. At the same time, increased incidence of climate events such as droughts, such as floods, etc., will become much more frequent. And the increased frequency of these adverse climate events is something that will have major impacts on supplies and major impacts in terms of volatility of food prices. And one needs to think about managing climate change, both in terms of managing short-term volatility as well as managing the long-term trend. In terms of short-term volatility, there are several options that are available, both in terms of better input management practices, better water management practices, conservation agriculture, etc., but also looking at effective models of managing risks at the community level. Better crop insurance systems, better index insurance systems, other mechanisms for community-based risk management are all options that need to be addressed. But when you look at the longer term, I think the major intervention that needs to take place for adapting agriculture systems to climate change is to adapt crops to manage stress better, adapt varieties that can manage drought, that can manage submergence, and other climate-related stress, and to make crops more tolerant to managing these stress. And by focusing R&D on climate stress and adapting to climate stress, one can have agriculture systems that can sustain climate impacts over the long term and sustain food prices at a lower level and stabilize food prices despite the long-term changes anticipated through climate change. So let me bring my talk to a conclusion now. The primary message that I'd like to give you is that if you're thinking about long-term management of food prices, both in terms of volatility and in terms of level, then the primary way in which one can address this is to focus on productivity improvement, especially smallholder productivity improvement, and to do it in a sustainable manner. And I suspect as you think about how one should get there, there are several options. But let me give you my list of options. My list of options is first, focus on an enabling environment for productivity growth for smallholder agriculture. And this would include investments in R&D, investments in infrastructure, better institutional arrangements for access to land, access to water and other resources, credit extension, etc., and a better incentive environment in terms of better price and price policy environment that provides incentives for smallholders to enhance their overall productivity. Second, to focus on reducing transactions costs for smallholders associated with access to inputs and output markets. This is important whether you're in a semi-subsistence system in the least developed countries or whether you're a smallholder farmer trying to access the supermarket value chains in emerging economies. Third, massive investments in R&D and infrastructure for addressing climate stress technologies that can tolerate climate stress, such as drought, submergence, etc., is absolutely crucial. Fourth, one needs to focus on long-term sustainable donor support for agriculture development across the developing world, but with a particular emphasis on donor support for the least developed countries, particularly countries in sub-Saharan Africa. At the same time, one needs to continue to promote the need for domestic support for agriculture, domestic support for budgetary support as well as policy support for enhancing overall productivity of agriculture continues to be needed, and we need to continue promoting that. Finally, I think we need to focus a lot on better data and better information on the state of agriculture, the state of crops and livestock in particular countries, regions, and across the world. With better data, one can respond better to crisis situations, and one has better information on the extent of the crisis and the response that's needed. And that transparency of better data is absolutely crucial for managing long-term volatility in food prices. This is an enormous task for us, but we've been there before. We've managed overall food supplies and food security before, and we can do it as we look into the future. Thank you so much for your attention. I'm sorry I will not be able to answer any questions, but I'm always ready to respond to your queries by email. I hope you have a great conference. Thank you once again.